And open up to Genesis chapter 1 that was read a few minutes ago. You might have picked up your bulletin this morning and thought, what in the world are we talking about today? I entitled the lesson, Dinosaurs? What's the point? Maybe whenever you were a young child, you first heard stories of these big old ancient creatures, dinosaurs, and maybe it was something that as you grew up and got married, and then your children came along, and they started hearing stories about these massive animals of old. Maybe it made you scratch your head a little bit. Maybe your children asked you questions, and you said, I don't know. I don't claim to know everything there is to know about them. I don't even claim to know a couple of percentage points of everything about them. But this morning, I think we can take some time looking at Scripture and see what God's point was behind these humongous, gigantic animals. A couple of things you want to start off with. I want you to realize, I heard someone once say that these dinosaur bones are just, God just planted those there. And I thought, God is not a God of deceit. That is not the way He has ever worked. So that's one, that was really easy to write off. But to look back and to see these animals, I'll give you a few descriptions. This is just from fossil records being put together. Tyrannosaurus rex is one of the names. Just one tooth out of its mouth, 11 inches long. What is that thing made to eat? I mean, if that's just one tooth, you imagine even carrying around a head like that, filled full of teeth? These things are gigantic. A brontosaurus, or brachiosaurus, is 40 feet high and 80 feet long. That's humongous. This is the one that kind of caught my idea. If you're a parent and you go pick your children up at school, and especially in the afternoon, where the buses are kind of lined up in front of each other, kind of look like a train. There's an Argentinosaurus that's 130 feet long. Three buses back to back would still not be long enough to compare. Three yellow dog buses. That's huge. And that's just its length, let alone talking about any kind of power or ability it may have. Whenever you consider the fact that one of these buses holds who knows how many kids, how many could one of those Argentinosauruses, how many kids could it hold? Travel would be a lot easier. But you look at these things and we go, well, what did they eat? How big were they? What's their purpose? Why did God even bother with all this stuff? Why are they no longer here? I think we can answer all those questions just looking at our Bibles. Now, Genesis chapter 1. I had this reading this morning because this is where we're going to start. Looking at verse 26. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them, mankind, rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So did man rule over the dinosaurs? They did. That kind of blows my mind to begin with. And it even says over the fish of the sea. What if some of these dinosaurs just lived in the water? They ruled over them there too. Let's keep going. Verse 27. God created man in His own image, and the image of God He created him. Male and female He created them. Verse 28. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth. It says, you subdue it, you rule over it, your domain. Over all these humongous animals, even down to the smallest ant, all of them. They're all under your rule. You might say, how would that even work? We'll get to that. Verse 29.
Then God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the surface of all the earth, and every tree which has fruit yielding seed, it shall be food for you. He says, all the fruits, all the veggies, everything is yours to eat. What are you noticing is not mentioned yet? No meat. They're all vegetarian. He says, green plants, vegetables, seeds within it. Then comes verse 30. To every beast of the earth and every bird of the sky and everything that moves on the earth which has life, I have given every green plant for food, and it was so. What about all the animals and the these birds of the air? What are they all eating? Green plants. What a sigh of relief for a human being with these great big old creatures around. They're not allowed to eat us. Fantastic. God has wisdom. They're eating all the green plants. So you don't have to worry about running for your life. They don't eat us. Fantastic. So you see, things work out pretty easy. God is there. He's created the dinosaurs. He's created man in his own image. And he says, you rule over them. He says, nothing can eat meat yet. You're all going to eat green life and vegetation. God's got a plan for down the road on all this too. You see all these things going on, and here are these dinosaurs, and all they do is eat green plants and vegetation and fruit. Things work out pretty easy. So you start to consider and to think that men like Adam and women like Eve lived in a time with dinosaurs. Men like Enoch lived in a time with dinosaurs. Cain and Abel and Seth lived in a time where these dinosaurs roam the earth. Man lived together with them. These humongous creatures. Look over at Genesis chapter 6. We kind of wonder, well, how long did they make it? We know they're not around today. How long do they live? Well, let's take some food for thought here from the Word of God. Look at verse 13. Days upon the earth have grown pretty bad. People are pretty violent. Every thought is only evil continually within them, except within Noah and his family. Here comes verse 13, Genesis 6:13. Then God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms, and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. 450 feet long. If you think in terms of football, you think 150 yards. That's humongous. 450 feet long. It says it's 75 feet wide and even 45 feet tall. It's taller than this ceiling that you see in here. It's humongous. And it runs for 450 feet long. Here's this ark made to take all these animals to the new world. Notice the next verse, verse 18. You shall make a window for it. It says, and finish it to a cubit from the top, and set the door on the ark in the side of it. You shall make with lower, second, and third decks. Pay attention to verse 17. Behold, I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life from under heaven. He says, I'm going to destroy everything that has the breath of life in it, except for what's on this ark. It says, everything that is on the earth shall perish. Verse 18, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you, your sons, and your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing that is of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. It says, we're going to set this thing up to populate the earth again. Verse 20, pay special attention here. Of the birds after their kind, and of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing of the ground after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. Was Noah going to have to go out and be a rodeo cowboy and gather up two of everything? No. He says, they will come to you. Can you imagine seeing a full array of animals coming your direction? So who is picking which animals survive? God is. Here's the other thought for you. We've talked about some of these things being as big as three buses long. That's still not much compared to 450 feet. Who says they had to come being full grown to start? They're going to have a year inside that ark before they get off. Here they are coming together. And if you notice, here's where it still is, verse 21. As for you, take for yourself some of all food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, for it shall be for food for you and for them. What are they going to gather up? All the green plant, all the vegetation, all the fruit, and it'll all be fed. If you've ever wondered the question, how in the world could you have on the same ark tigers and lambs? And it all worked together where they don't eat each other and gobble each other up. They can't eat meat yet. They're still all eating this green herbs and vegetation. Pretty easy, isn't it? Now, look on down a little bit further. I want you to look into chapter 9. This is after the flood's over. God's already brought them safely through. Noah offers up an offering to the Lord, gratitude, thankfulness. If you can imagine being delivered from a world that is filled with violence and evil and now being brought off into a world that only has the eight of you that survived, can you imagine how thankful he was? Then chapter 9 begins. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Verse 2. The fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky. With everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea into your hand they are given. He says, everything is going to be afraid of you. Everything? What if you still got a bunch of big dinosaurs hanging around? He says, they'll even be afraid of you now. They weren't afraid of you before. This is different. Because you're about to see the food chain change as well. Look at the next verse. Here's verse 3. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. After they get off the ark, God says, it's time for things to change. He says, now here you are. I'm going to put the fear and the terror of you on everything else, on all the beasts, all the fish. And by the way, now that they're going to run from you, you can eat them. God gave the animals a fair shot. He says, I just kind of imagine Noah standing there and being surrounded by all these animals that have been delivered. He says, I'm going to put the fear and the terror of you. And then comes this cloud of dust and they all take off. And he goes, and by the way, now you can eat them. Oh, so close. But I want you to notice this. Whenever people go back and look through fossil records, they look at dinosaurs and they put them into two groups. They say, well, some of these dinosaurs have teeth that are pretty flat. They look like they ate vegetation. Then you get old T-Rex. He's got these long, sharp teeth, about 11, 12 inches long, just one of them. He says, he sure doesn't look like he's eating potatoes for breakfast. And so it looks like they ate meat, which tells you what? The dinosaurs made it on the ark, and they even came after the ark. Because you don't have any meat eaters until this point in time in the chronology of this creation. Man is living with dinosaurs, roaming the earth. Now, you look through all this and say, well, yeah, but how long did they really last? Well, let's work on that. Look at Genesis chapter 10. Look at verse 21. I'm going to show you just a few layers of genealogy here. We know that on the ark is Noah, his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Genesis chapter 10, verse 21. also to Shem. So Shem's the son of Noah. Also to Shem, the father of all the children of Eber, and the older brother of Japheth, children were born. The sons of Shem, here they are listed, all five of them, Elam and Ashur and Arpachshad and Lud and Aram. Then verse 23, the sons of Aram were Uz and Hurl and Gether and Mash. So I want you to see this for a moment. There's Noah. One of his sons' name is Shem. One of Shem's sons' name is Aram. And one of Aram's sons' name is Uz. How's that for a good name? Four generations, Uz being the great-grandson of Noah. You say, why are you telling us this? Look over at the book of Job. Look at Job chapter 1. Don't worry, there's a point here. Look at Job chapter 1, look at verse 1. Job chapter 1, verse 1. Have you ever noticed that if you're given the right to name something, like a street or a town, you ever notice what people normally do? They name it after themselves. Like all of a sudden you got a great big old king and you land in America and you want to decide what to name your town, you call it Jamestown. Well, okay, we'll just name it after these people. I want to show you this isn't a new practice. Job chapter 1, verse 1. There was a man in the land of Uz. You mean that same Uz that's the great-grandson of Noah? Yeah, it's Uz's land. Now, the story's not about Uz. It's about a man who comes later by the name of Job. And that man was blameless, upright, fearing God, and turning away from evil. Now, you might say, well, what does that have to do with anything about dinosaurs? Look over at Job chapter 40. Look at verse 15. There's going to be two mighty creatures described at the end of chapter 40 and at the basically all of chapter 41. One of them has the name of Behemoth. The one in chapter 41 has the name of Leviathan. You see what they sound like to you. Now, the term dinosaur doesn't show up anywhere in the Bible because it's a generic term for a lot of things. But I want you to notice this. Look at verse 15. Now, this is the Lord talking to Job. Behold now, Behemoth, which I made as well as you, he eats grass like an ox. Well, tell me. He'd been around for a long time, right? Back before the flood, everything ate green grass. Here's one that made it through. Here's something else for you. If you have a footnote on the word behemoth in verse 15, it might say something like hippopotamus. Go ahead and take out a pen and just mark right through that. Don't underline it. Mark right through it, and I'll show you why here in a moment. It's not just me. Look at verse 16. Behold now his strength in his loins and his power in the muscles of his belly. He bends his tail like a cedar. Have you ever seen the tail on a hippopotamus? It's about as big as T-Rex's one tooth. Bends his tail like a cedar. That fit to you? You can mark through hippopotamus. This isn't a hippopotamus. He says, the sinews of his thighs, his ligaments, are knit together. His bones are tubes of bronze. His limbs are like bars of iron. Look at the way Behemoth is described. His bones are like tubes of bronze. He says, his limbs are like bars of iron. He says, when he bends his tail, it's like a cedar tree moving around, like a cedar of Lebanon. Here's the point. Look at verse 19. He is the first of the ways of God because he is powerful. Let his maker bring near his sword. If Behemoth is going to be slain, it will be God's hand that kills him. It won't be anybody else. How would you slay an animal that's as big as three buses? What's your first move? Run. That's your first move. Look at verse 20. Surely the mountains bring him food, and all the beasts of the field play there. Under the lotus plants he lies down, in the coverts of the reeds in the marsh. He says, here are these lotus plants. Once again, vegetarian is this animal. He says, the lotus plants cover him with shade, and the willows of the brook surround him. If a river rages, he is not alarmed. He is confident, though the Jordan rushes to his mouth. Have you ever stood in a swift river and been concerned about whether you will be carried down further than you want to go? Behemoth stands in the middle of the Jordan and says, so it's a river. Who cares? It doesn't move me. Think of how big and strong you have to be where the strongest currents of perhaps even the Mississippi River don't alarm you. That's Behemoth. Bones like tubes of bronze, limbs like iron. Strength, this is the first of the ways of the Lord, power. Verse 24, here's the question. Can anyone capture him when he is on watch? With barbs, can anyone pierce his nose? I want you to hear the funny in this. God, in talking to Job, says, can anyone capture him when he is on watch? He's talking this to Job like Job has seen a behemoth before. Because he probably has. He's only four generations away from Noah. God isn't describing something and saying, oh, well, you've never heard of behemoth, have you? Well, let me tell you a few stories. He doesn't do it that way, does he? He says, Job, you know behemoth. You've seen him. You've seen him out in the middle of the river, and the water doesn't move him. Can anyone capture him when he is on watch? If Behemoth is paying attention, can you capture him? And then he goes so far as to say, you know, man's tried that before. You want to know how far he got? He pierced his nose once. He says, with barbs, can anyone pierce his nose? Boy, I've seen people who have their nose pierced. They don't look like they're about ready to die. They might have it one thought. Thought it. You start to see the point. Who stands in control? Who has all the power? It's God. If you notice back in verse 19, he says, let his maker bring near his sword. It's only going to be God that kills him. It's not going to be anyone else. Look at the beginning of chapter 41. He says, can you draw out Leviathan with a fish hook or press down his tongue with a cord? He says, could you even put his tongue down? You ever been to the doctor and he say ah, and he puts that little tongue depressor down? Do you feel like whenever he sticks your tongue down that you're about to die? I hope not. God's saying, can you even hold his tongue down, Leviathan? You can't. What does that tell you about Leviathan's strength? We've moved on to another one. Now, I'm going to show it to you again. You see the word Leviathan in verse 1? Do you have a footnote for that name? Here it is. Go ahead and read it. The crocodile. I'll go ahead and tell you. Take out your handy-dandy pen and pencil. Scratch that one off. I'll show you why as we go. We don't have time to read all this. I really wish we did. I wish we could take time and go through all of chapter 41. But I want you to skip down. We'll read through some of these things quickly. Verse 2. Can you put a rope in his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you, or will he speak to you soft words? Will he beg you for his life with you? No, he won't. He says, will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him for a servant forever? No. He says, Will you play with him as with a bird, or will you bind him for your maidens? Will he be a show-off? Will you stuff him and put him on the wall to say, yeah, I killed one of these things? No, you won't. He says, will the traders bargain over him? Will they divide him among the merchants? Are they going to sell his skins for profit? No, because they don't have any. He's out of stock with them. Verse 7, can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. He said, give it a try. Go get one. Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. You will not do it again. See how he's talking to Job and saying, look, if you think you're so strong and so mighty, why don't you go get Leviathan? He says, just go try it once. Which tells you, is Leviathan still alive in the times of Job? He's still there. Then he says, remember it. You won't do it again. You only stick the paper clip in the socket once. It doesn't take twice, unless you're harebrained. He says, verse 9, he says, behold, your expectation is false. Will you be laid over even at the sight of him? If you just saw Leviathan, you would faint. If he's coming at you. Notice the question. Here's the point, verse 10. No one is so fierce that he dares to arouse him. No one. Nobody. Unless you're an idiot. Who then is he that can stand before me? You tell me what the point of these dinosaurs was. If you're not going to go out and capture Leviathan, if you're too afraid to even go rouse him up, and I'm the only one who's going to destroy them, who do you think you are to stand before me? I created Leviathan. I created Behemoth. What's the point of all these dinosaurs? To show the awesome power of our God and for it to never be forgotten. I love it when children ask questions about dinosaurs. Because my goal is not to teach them about dinosaurs. My goal is to teach them about a living God who made the dinosaur and who reigns over them and who destroyed them. Now, for sake of time, we're not going to cover the rest of chapter 41. By the way, Leviathan breathes fire. I'll let you read it for yourself. I've never seen a crocodile that can breathe fire. That's why he gets crossed off the list. I want to show you one more thing. Look over at the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 27. Isaiah chapter 27, look at verse 1. It says, in that day the Lord will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, with his fierce and great and mighty sword, even Leviathan, the twisted serpent, and he will kill the dragon who lives in the sea. Notice how Leviathan's talked about. I want you to notice it doesn't have a footnote saying crocodile. Somebody over here in Isaiah knows a little bit better than what those people know over in Job. In that day, the Lord will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent. Now, whenever you think of serpents, you probably think of something small. With his fierce and great and mighty sword, this is the Lord, even Leviathan, the twisted serpent, and he will kill the, and it uses this word that we're not comfortable with, he will kill the dragon who lives in the sea. Leviathan's a dragon. You go back and you read Job 41, see the rest of it, it'll knock your socks off. Consider this thought. Whenever people ask the question, why are there no more dinosaurs? Because the Almighty said there wouldn't be. He took out his sword and he said, no more. He slayed the dragon. You ever thought about God being the dragon slayer? He's the Almighty. These people were scared to stand in front of Behemoth and Leviathan. What about their Creator? Do we have fear and honor and respect for our God, seeing that He is the one who caused the extinction of these great large animals? Seeing that men like Noah and Shem and Job were contemporaries with these dinosaurs, whether they ate lotus plants or whether they ate meat, here they were. So if your children or your grandchildren ever ask you the question about dinosaurs and say, what's the point? The point is we serve an awesome God. And the next time you go to pick up your children from school and you see three buses in a row, think of an animal or a creature that's that big and realize that you serve a God who could kill a whole army of them. That's our God. He is to be honored, He is to be praised, and He is to be set above all else. No one was stupid enough to rouse Leviathan and Behemoth. Yet sometimes we get really dumb to rouse up the anger of our God, to turn from His ways of wisdom and His power and His strength. We need to be a people who turn to our God and fight with Him, not against Him.